Welcome to the Musings on Sports podcast for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2022. I'm Kelly Elbin, along with my good friend and co-host, Bob Bupka. Hey, Bob, I thought we'd talk a little baseball as we lead into the interview that you and I conducted with the fantastic Tim Kirkjian of ESPN last week. And I know which our listeners will really enjoy hearing in a few minutes. But, man, what a tough break we've got to start out with on the news that Will Zalatoris, Bob, who wins 2 weeks ago his first PGA Tour title after so many close calls, and then unfortunately had to withdraw after four holes last week in the second FedEx Cup event. And then today the announcement that he has to withdraw from the Tour Championship and the President's Cup next month, two herniated discs in the lower back. He will get the last place prize of $500,000 for this week, but it could have been so much more. I really feel terrible for this young guy.
Well, you know, it's the fickle nature of golf, and that's why any top professional will tell you that they're one swing away from possibly their career ending, and I'm certainly not hoping or even predicting that that's going to be the case in Will Zalatoris. It's certainly perfectly understandable about, you know, the Tour Championship, it's too close, you know, for him to be properly healed. And as far as the President's Cup, there's no way that he should risk re-injuring that back right. In basically a glorified exhibition match. So his career far more important down the road than playing in the President's Cup. And, you know, all indications are that Will's a good guy, but boy, oh boy, two things that scare me, Kelly, when I think of injuries with golfers. Number one, their wrist, and number two, or maybe the other way around, truthfully, number one, their back,
yep,
and number two, their wrist. You know, sometimes, despite modern medical science, you know, a back is a very complex piece of the body.
Sure is. And that's always been my biggest concern among the elite players. And frankly, let's just be honest, among a lot of, you know, amateur players like myself who play once or twice a week, they nag that lower back. It can be nagging and then it can be really bad, as what Will is dealing with. You hate to see it for a young player, and seems to be a popular player. People really like him. Man, he came so close, PGA Championship this year, Masters last year, U.S. Open this year. The future is bright for sure for Will Z, but he's got to get that back. He's got to get that body in better shape.
Well said, Kelly. And that's why every time I hear after somebody comes close, you know, especially in a major championship, oh, well, he'll have plenty of opportunity. Well, you never know. And we're finding that out right now with Will Zalatoris.
Yeah, you've said that before, and it's very true. There are no guarantees, and certainly in golf. Hey, we've got a few baseball stories we want to talk about in conjunction with Tim Kirkjian joining us. How much does that guy, Tim Kirkjian of ESPN, Bob, how much does he love baseball? How infectious was it just talking with him when we interviewed him last week, and which people are going to hear shortly?
Well, I will say this much. We've had the pleasure and opportunity of interviewing a lot of great people over the last couple of months, and I certainly have enjoyed each and every one of them for different reasons. But Tim Kirkjian, his passion for the sport of baseball, coupled with his knowledge, I mean, he certainly was a lock to get into the Hall of Fame, and now he is in the Hall of Fame. But I've enjoyed his work on Little League Baseball over the past couple of weeks. I mean, he just knows when to say the right thing. He just has the right fact at the top of his fingers. He's always, you know, preaching the benefits of baseball, especially the young kids. And boy, he's been a pleasure. He was a pleasure. And I guarantee you the listeners of Musings on Sports are going to love hearing the interview we have upcoming with Tim Kurkjian.
He's a very sophisticated guy when it comes to baseball because it's been his life. At the same time, he's very relatable in how he explains things. He doesn't talk down to you. He talks with you. And really, it's always about celebrating the game. And that's what people, I think, are going to get a lot of joy out of listening to the 30 minutes or so with Tim. A few storylines right now in baseball, Bob. The Yankees certainly are one of them. It's been a dreadful August for them. What looked to be a runaway American League East is now down to seven games in the loss column, leading the both Tampa Bay and Toronto. And when you play 162 games, right, there's going to be some peaks. There's going to be some valleys, and they've been going through that. The great outfielder Paul O'Neill had his number 21 retired at a stadium at a ceremony on Sunday at Yankee Stadium, where Brian Cashman, the GM, was booed by the fans. Where Hal Steinbrenner, the managing general partner of the Yankees, was booed. Sometimes you just have to survive these valleys, and the Yankees have enough players, Bob. You know, they haven't won the World Series since 2009. And I think there's some sense of pressure there, and particularly when things aren't going so well.
Well, you hit the nail right on the head. You know, you play for the New York Yankees. They've always had the most money. They've always had the most media. They've always had the most critical fans. So that when you're going well and you're a New York Yankee, boy, oh boy, do you get a ton of positive media. Yeah. On the flip side, when you're not going well and you're a New York Yankee, the negative media attention is overwhelming. And, you know, I trust that the Yankees will right the ship and they'll be all right. Will they win the World Series? You know, you never know, especially when when the series comes down to, what, a 4 out of 7 series?
Right.
Anything can happen, but I certainly would like the chances right now of the New York Yankees coming out on top this year, winning the World Series.
And if not the Yankees, the team in Queens, the Mets, they remind me right now, particularly with the pitching, of my Washington Nationals from 3 years ago, when the Nationals had Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg and Patrick Corbin, and they just got it done somehow against the Houston Astros in the World Series. The Mets with Scherzer and finally a healthy Jacob DeGrom, and this closer, Edwin Diaz, who's just been lights out, literally, coming out of the bullpen this year for the Mets. It's a solid lineup. You've got a sort of a star, if you will, and certainly in Pete Alonso and in Lindor. You've got really good parts in Starling Marte and Jeff McNeil. But the pitching, Bob, when it gets to those 4 out of 7 series, to have big-time arms like they have. They lost last night. They lost the first game of that Subway Series to the Yankees. So for at least one night, the folks in the Bronx are happy. But that Mets team, they're really good. They are really good at the position that matters most in the postseason, and that's pitching.
Absolutely correct. And Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, he would never say it publicly, but if he had a wish, what does he want? He wants a World Series, the Mets versus the Yankees, the ultimate Subway Series. And what a shot in the arm that would be for Major League Baseball. It would be widely watched, highly anticipated. You got the unbelievable pitching on the Mets side. And then, of course, you got Aaron Judge, the home run king, on the Yankees side.
Baseball as we know it today is those teams. It's the Yankees and the Mets. And they're going to be chasing it for sure. They've got contenders, the Braves, trying to win back-to-back World Series, trying to become the first to win back-to-back World Series since the Yankees won 3 in a row, 98, 99, and 2000. That's the game of today. We all have great memories of baseball. And I think part of the lore of Tim Kurkjian is about the memories and time shared, certainly with him growing up with his dad and his brothers. You know, for me, I can still picture, Bob, it's been 51 years now. I can still picture my dad driving the two of us to RFK Stadium on the morning of Monday, April 5th, 1971, to see opening day for the Senators. Dick Bosman went through a complete game. Complete games in baseball don't happen anymore, much less on opening day, by the way. But he tossed a complete game. The Senators got Divide a Blue of the Oakland Athletics early. They shut out the A's 8-0. Unfortunately, that turned out to be the final opening day in the history of the Washington Senators, because by year end, they were moved by Bob Short, the owner at that time, to become the Texas Rangers. But what a day at the ballpark that was. You, my friend, you've got to have a great baseball memory.
I don't have anything as close to what you just described, that's for sure. And I would think there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people that remember the first time that they were brought to a major league park by their mom, by their dad, by both of them. Ironically enough, my favorite baseball story, and it's a little bit of a stretch, but maybe not, covering a golf course tournament out in Los Angeles, and somebody came over to me and said, "Would you like to talk to Ernie Banks?" I said, "What? Ernie Banks? I mean, I wasn't a connoisseur of Major League Baseball, but I certainly knew the name of Ernie Banks." And he came over, and we had a 20-minute interview, but 4 hours later, he was still sitting there. We were talking. One of the nicest, most genuine people that I've ever met. Forget the fact that he was an incredible superstar. Yeah. Just a big, gentle giant. And it was so funny because it was going to be a playoff that week for the LA Open. And the playoff was going to be between Tiger Woods and Billy Mayfair. And Ernie said, "Well, who's going to win, Bob?" And I said, "Billy Mayfair." And Ernie L says, "No, it's going to be Tiger Woods." And every time after that, whenever I saw Ernie, and I didn't see him enough, but I saw him quite a few times, he'd say, "There's the Billy Mayfair man. There's the Billy Mayfair man."
Good story. Yeah, Mr. Banks, God love him. Let's play two was always his motto. And he was a wonderful ambassador for the game, both on the field and off. And our guest that you hear from in just a minute, certainly from the broadcast booth, he wrote for a long time, Tim Kirkjian, and now in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Can't wait for you guys to hear him, and you will right after these words from our friends at Titleist.
Titleist is the number one ball in golf. Yes, being number one is a number, and more players trust the Pro V1 or Pro V1X than all other golf balls combined. But being number one is more than a number. It's a mindset. It's a relentless mission to design and manufacture the best performing golf balls in the game, so you can chase whatever your number one is. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Sports. Bob, what a pleasure it is to welcome the newest recipient of the Baseball Writers Association of America's Career Excellence Award, a wordsmith whose passion for the game shines brightly every time we see him on ESPN, and how appropriate it is that he attended Walter Johnson High School in Bethesda, Maryland, where he wrote for the school newspaper called, of course, The Pitch. Tim Kirkjian of ESPN, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Well, Tim, you've been honored throughout your career, but this award that you just recently received certainly takes it to another level. And I'd like to inject a personal observation. This is my first time speaking to you, but I've admired your work for quite a long time. And what always impresses me, Tim, is not only your knowledge for the sport of baseball, but the passion that you have for the sport, and just a few days ago, watching coverage of ESPN and the tragedy that took place at Uvalde, Texas. I mean, you were basically overcome on the set there. Just once again, a clear example of the passion that you have for baseball.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's the greatest game ever. It's a beautiful game. It is a game that has been with me my entire life. Baseball was the primary language spoken in our house growing up. My dad was a really good player, and he gave his three boys a great love for the game, a great feel for the game. He taught us how to play the game. So this has been with me my entire life. I don't have a whole lot of other interests. I'm pretty bad at most things, but I've always loved baseball since I was a tiny little kid, and now I'm 65 years old, and I love it as much today as I ever have. And I wish more and more people would understand how great this game is. It's a very seductive game. Once it grabs you, it never lets go. And it grabbed me as a very, very young boy.
Well, speaking of great, how about a phone call from the great Johnny Bench congratulating you on your recent award? A great story surrounding that phone call. Would you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, the morning after I won this award, so it was December the 8th, the day after Johnny Bench's birthday, he called me on the phone at 8:30 in the morning and said, "Congratulations, Tim. Welcome to the club. You're one of us now." So let's be clear, fellas. I'm not one of them. I'm not really in their club. But the greatest catcher of all time called me on the phone to congratulate me. And then he said in a very soft and poignant voice, he said, "You know, Tim, it's moments like this that take you back to Little League." And I was just about ready to cry again when he said, "And let's face it, Tim, you could still fit into a Little League uniform." It was classic Johnny Bench, and that's why we love that guy, not just for being a great catcher, but because he's such a great ambassador for the sport and such a fun and playful guy.
Hey, Tim, I know you had a recent luncheon with some friends of mine, Johnny Holiday, the longtime voice of the University of Maryland football and basketball, Bob Malloy, the winningest high school football coach in the state of Maryland. And they mentioned that you told them you practiced your acceptance speech approximately 100 times and you got emotional every time. Is that correct?
No, it was 200 times. And I did it 200 times alone out loud, and I got emotional every time I did it because, you know, my brother has ALS. He's my best friend. I can't get through that sentence without crying. My parents, who've been gone, for my dad for, you know, 19 years and my mother for 2 years, they meant so much to me. I couldn't get through any sort of discussion of them without losing it a little bit. So, but my goal was to make sure I got through that speech in one piece without falling down, without fainting. I've never been so scared or nervous in my life, but I got through it. I memorized that speech. It ran 16 minutes, which was close to the time allotted. So I felt really good about things afterward. And I breathed a giant sigh of relief that I got through that because it was stressful. And yet, the most wonderful day of my professional life.
Well, you and I both at different times worked for the Montgomery Journal newspaper in the Maryland County where we grew up, like you, a big sports fan growing up. But you certainly, the influence of your dad, you mentioned him earlier. Is there a story that you'd like to share that maybe might best define your passion for sports early on, something your dad may have done for you and your brothers, a catch in the backyard, something like that?
Yeah, my dad was, like I said, a really good player. My two brothers are in the Baseball Hall of Fame at Catholic University. And my dad used to routinely, while we're sitting around watching a game or whatever we're doing, he would say to me or my brother, he would say, "All right, you're playing shortstop. Runners at first and third, one out. Ground ball to your left, really fast runner coming to second, fast runner going to first. What are you doing with the ball?" He did this stuff to us all the time. And then he would show us, he would throw a pillow down in the middle of the rec room when we were kids and show us the proper way to make the double play. You know, here's where your feet go, this is where your hands go. And he would always complete the double play by throwing the ball into the couch. Well, one time he threw it a little bit too high for the couch, and he threw the ball through the French door window and broke it. And he looked at me, his youngest son, and said, "Tim, tell Mom that you did it, and I'll get you off easy." That kind of summed up who my dad was. He was a brilliant man, a PhD in mathematics, MIT undergrad, and he used his mathematical knowledge and everything else for practical application to baseball. My love of statistics comes directly from my father.
How about that? Yeah. Bob, I know you want to ask Tim about a certain basketball game at a legendary shortstop's house. But before that, Tim, you mentioned Mr. Bench as the greatest catcher of all time. And I understand you have your all-time first team baseball team of all time. Obviously, Johnny is your catcher. Who else do you have?
Well, most people have already done this. And let's be clear, okay? This is my list, okay? It's
right.
Not the correct list. It's not the only list. It's my list. And everyone else should have their own list. So I have Johnny Bench as the catcher, Lou Gehrig at first, Rogers Hornsby at second, Hannes Wagner at shortstop, Mike Schmidt at third, Ted Williams in left, Willie Mays in center, Babe Ruth in right. Walter Johnson is the right-handed pitcher. Lefty Grove is the left-handed pitcher. And Mariano Rivera is the relief pitcher. Now, I maintain if you guys came up with your all-time teams, you would look at me and say, mine's better than yours, and yours is better than mine, whatever. That's the beauty of this discussion. And to me, what makes baseball so great is that we can put Rogers Hornsby on this list, even though he played 100 years ago. We can put Hannes Wagner on this list because he played 110 years ago, because this is the one game, I believe, where true greatness transcends all eras. And I really believe Babe Ruth, with all the advantages of today, would have been a great player today. I think Ted Williams would lead the league in hitting if he played today and we gave him an opportunity to learn how today's game's played. You can't do that in the other sports. Just another separator for baseball.
Hey, Tim, since I pitched against Collier Strempsky in high school, can I put him as my pinch hitter?
Oh, of course. That's the point of any list. You can do whatever you want. It's your list. You can put Babe Ruth as your pitcher and then get Hank Aaron in right field. It doesn't matter. It's your list, and that's the beauty of it.
Well, I'm going to go by your list, my friend. Hey, let's hear about a basketball game that you played at Cal Ripken's house. How did it come about? Who played, and how'd you do in that game?
Well, I played 100 times in a game with him, and that's a raging conflict of interest, which I should never acknowledge. But I just accidentally showed up at this dingy little gym, high school gym, during the off season, and he was playing. And the game was so much fun that I decided if I was asked back, I would go back. So I played with him a whole bunch of times. And just to show you how competitive he was, occasionally, if I was on the other team from him and his man was a little late getting down on defense, he enjoyed harassing me all the way down the court. He is a foot taller than me. He weighs 100 pounds more than I do. And he enjoyed trying to keep me from advancing the ball across the half court line, because that's who Cal Ripken was. Finally, I just looked at him and said, basically, this is the lowest pickup game you can possibly find. Would you please quit trying for 1 second? Would you please leave me alone? And he said no. And that was it. That's who he is. So I played a bunch of those games in that gym. And then, of course, he built the big gym at his house. I played a few times there. There was nothing better than that. A full court, beautiful gym in your backyard that had hitting facilities. It had a movie theater in it. It had a score clock. I played a few games there. There are 100 stories to tell about that.
Oh, boy, Tim. Speaking of stories, how about in terms of the games you've covered, both as a sports writer and on ESPN. What's been the single greatest moment, if it's possible to isolate that moment?
Yeah, it's really hard because I've covered every World Series game since 1981, and I saw so many amazing things. But I think, getting back to Cal Ripken, I think the night he passed Lou Gehrig for the most consecutive games played was the most powerful moment that I've ever spent in a major league park. So before that game began, a buddy of mine, Bob Elliott, who's also in the Baseball Hall of Fame now like I am, he came up to me, and he was from Toronto. He hadn't been a part of the build-up to 21-31. He didn't know Cal Ripken well at all. And he looked at me and he said, you know, what's the big deal here? I don't feel it. I don't see it. I don't get it. Why is this such a big deal tonight? So I said, Bob, look, I don't know, but something's going to happen tonight that's going to be unforgettable. I promise you. And then Ripken in the fifth inning breaks Gehrig's record. They drop the banner down from the warehouse, 2-1, 3-1. And then he gets pushed out of the dugout by Bobby Bonilla and Rafael Palmeiro. And he made this 22-minute run around the stadium, patting his heart, blowing kisses to people, slapping hands. It was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. People were weeping all throughout the stadium because this was more than a baseball story. This was a story about, you know, commitment and neighborhood and loyalty and team. And it was so, so good. And at the end, after 22 minutes of this, Bob Elliott, my dear friend, came up to me, and he had tears in his eyes. And he looked at me, and he said, okay, I get it. And we all got it that night because we all understood that this was more than a baseball story. This was a story about somebody, a player doing something no one had ever done before, and I promise you will never come close to being done again.
Tim Kirkjian of ESPN is with us on Musings on Sports. Okay, Tim, a couple quick ones here for you. How about, in your opinion, among the modern stadium / ballparks, the best of them right now and the worst of them, and why?
Well, the best of the modern park is still Camden Yards in Baltimore because it just celebrated its 30th birthday, and all these other beautiful ballparks followed in the Camden Yards mold that is San Francisco and Seattle and especially Pittsburgh. Camden Yards showed everyone how to build a cozy old-time brick ballpark, and it is still my favorite of the new parks. Of course, of the old parks, they'll always be my favorite, Fenway and Wrigley, but of the new ones, it has to be Camden Yards. As far as the old ballparks go, listen, I love all the ballparks, but Tropicana Field in Tampa, in St. Pete, sorry. It's got a dome. It's got a catwalk, which just got hit twice in one game the other day. That's not a healthy situation. No. It's got artificial turf, and not many people go to the games there. So as much as I actually enjoy going there, I think when you're picking the worst park, I think you have to go with an indoor park with artificial turf that has catwalks that get hit occasionally. I hate to do that because I love the people of St. Pete, but I'd have to put that first on the list.
Okay, fair enough. If you were commissioner for a day, what change, be it big or small, would you like to see made to the game to make it better?
Well, I've really come around on this, and I think it's time to at least look at whether we should make a change in the shifting that we see every day. Mark Teixeira, a really good player, 409 homers, my teammate for 4 years at ESPN. He's convinced me that this is worth a try. Look, fellas, you know this. We have too many walks, too many homers, and too many strikeouts in today's game. And I think it's at least in part because of the shift. A big left-handed hitter comes to the plate. He sees three guys lined up on the right side, and he says, well, I can't hit it through there, because there are three guys standing there, so I'm going to have to hit it over the shift. So he changes his approach. He wants to get the ball airborne. He swings as hard as he can. And that, in part, is where some of the walks, strikeouts, and home runs are coming from. Maybe if he looks out on the field, and there are two infielders on each side of second base now, and all feet begin the game, I mean, begin the play on the dirt, maybe that big left-handed hitter says, hey, I can hit a ground ball or a line drive up the middle and get a hit here. I can hit a hard ground ball to the right of the first baseman. I can get a hit here. We have lost the value of the hit. And I think if we did something with the shift, I think we might have a chance to get a few more hits, fewer strikeouts, fewer walks, fewer homers, and more balls put in play. And I think that's what we need.
Man, am I ever with you on that? If I see players like Bryce Harper hit rockets towards the second baseman that any other time in baseball history before this was allowed would be a single to right, and some guy standing halfway into right field gobbles it up and throws Harper out at first. I mean, for goodness sakes, Tim.
Yeah, that's what worries me, too. And a lot of people say, and perhaps accurately, well, why can't that big left-handed hitter just hit a line drive single to left field? Well, I'm here to tell you that's not as easy as it sounds, okay? The industry has taught these hitters how to hit. They've encouraged them to hit a certain way. And now to ask them, after swinging a certain way for 10 or 15 years, to change the way they swing the bat and do it tonight against Jacob DeGrom, well, good luck with that. So I'm not condoning, I'm not excusing any hitters. I think they need to do a much better job of making adjustments at the plate. But I think if we change the shift rule, I think we got a chance to get more balls in play. And that's what the game needs more than anything.
Well, we come to the bottom of the ninth, Tim. And if you could spend a week covering a major leaguer you never actually saw play, who would that be? And what would you ask him about?
I'd have to cover Babe Ruth for a week, because I would have to get to the bottom of how he became the greatest hitter of all time, and at one point was the best left-handed pitcher in the American League. How did he make that transition? How was he able to hit the ball as far as he did over 100 years ago? I mean, his power was legendary. How did he swing a bat that big? How was he able to run as well as he did? I mean, he hit 136 triples in his career. How was he able to run that well at that size? You know, he also batted left-handed, threw left-handed. He also wrote and ate with his right hand. Tell me about his ambidexterity. I have a million questions for Babe Ruth, and I'd also like to know, how in the world can you eat that much and drink that much, maybe the night before a game, and then show up and hit three home runs? I don't understand how he did it, but he's the greatest player of all time in my mind, and I'd like to learn a whole lot more about him.
Fabulous answer, Tim. I would love to hear those answers. Where does baseball go over the next decade in terms of teams like Oakland and Tampa that admittedly have lousy ballparks? Will they be around in 10 years? And if expansion takes place, do you have any cities you think are on the surefire list to get a team?
Well, first, I think we have to fix the Rays and the A's situation before we expand. I mean, we have two teams that are in trouble right now as far as their ballparks go. And mm-hmm. I hope Oakland gets a new stadium, but who knows? We've heard this many times. I think they're closer to getting one now than they've ever been, but that doesn't mean they're close. The Rays need a new ballpark, and I don't think they're close to getting a new ballpark. So let's get them fixed before we expand. But once expansion comes, I think Montreal deserves a second look. I think Nashville is interesting. I think Portland is interesting. I think Las Vegas is interesting. But those places have to have, you know, major league ballparks ready for expansion. And it's got to be big. And it's, you know, we can't have a 16,000 seat stadium. We need something legitimate. But I don't think we're there. I think we need to get the 30 teams in order first before we go to 32.
Well, Tim, final question. We've got Mariano Rivera, the Sandman, has two strikes on the hitter, one strike away from closing out the game. But before we let you go, we lost the greatest voice in the history of baseball in Mr. Scully not too long ago. Do you have a favorite story related to a time you spent with Vin Scully, a moment that you'll always remember?
Well, I spent a few moments with him over the years, and they were all just wonderful. He told me as a young man, he told me, you know, just write like you speak. And as long as you write like you speak, you will be genuine and sincere to what you're saying and writing. That was the most important thing he ever told me. But my favorite story didn't involve him with me directly. But as you guys know, as the greatest storyteller in baseball history, Vin Scully was unmatched. And his broadcast friends used to joke around that when Vin would start a story, the hitter never just grounded out to the shortstop on the first pitch. The game always allowed Vin to finish his story no matter how long it took. So years ago, I was driving around in Maryland listening to XM radio, and up comes Socrates Brito, an outfielder for the Diamondbacks. And Vin starts the story about the real Socrates, the Greek philosopher. And I'm thinking, what is he going to do with this? So during this 4-minute at bat for Socrates Brito, Vin Scully told us all about the Socrates, the real Socrates. Only Vin Scully could have accomplished that, because the game always made sure that Vin was able to finish his story.
Well, that's a wonderful exclamation point, and you have made sure to bring your passion to those of us who love the game through your work at ESPN. Tim Kirkjian, thank you so much for your time. Continued good luck with everything involved with ESPN. Are you going to be at the Little League World Series as well this year, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm going there tomorrow. I've been going now for 8 years. I think I am sent there every year now for just for context and for scale, because like half the kids in the Little League World Series are taller than me. So it's always a good measuring point to see how big some of the kids are. And if they're smaller than me, how small some of the kids are. So I love the Little League World Series. I can't wait to go back.
Tim Kirkjian again, thanks so much for joining us on Musings on Sports.
Today, there are smarter phones, smarter cars, smarter everything. So Bridgestone Golf's engineers thought, why not a smarter golf ball? Introducing the new Tour B, with a smart reactive IQ cover that delivers more power off your driver, more control off your wedges. Try Bridgestone's new Tour B with reactive IQ cover, the smarter tour ball.
It was fun to hear Tim give his all-time starting lineup in baseball history. And I think that's part of the charm of baseball, is it goes back so many years. And as he said, this is his team that he picked. But we can all have our favorite teams. But as we said at the beginning of the show, no one that I know of stands above Tim Kirkjian for his sheer passion and frankly, love of the game that I can remember ever talking to.
Well, I'll say this much, Kelly. If Tim Kirkjian has a player on his all-time team, that's about a higher recommendation as they're going to receive from anybody. His incredible knowledge, not only contemporary, but years past, was just amazing to listen to. And I know without saying that everybody that just finished listening to Tim Kirkjian here on Musings had to have a little smile on their face and in their heart, they had to say, boy, I enjoyed that.
And I know Timmy's also a big fan of Albert Pujols, who's been on a major tear of late as we record this. 6 home runs in his last 7 games. He's at 693 for his career, closing in on that magical 700 mark. Well, Pujols is fantastic. We want to thank Tim for his time, for his insights, and looking forward to next week. A little change of pace down history lane. We're coming up incredibly on the 50th anniversary of the gold medal game, basketball game in Munich between the United States and the Soviets that ended in the most controversial of fashion. And one of the members of the United States team, Tom McMillan, who would go on to become a United States congressman, is our guest, and really enjoyed hearing from Tom. Bob, when we talked with him, and I know our guests will learn a lot. And not everyone was around 50 years ago. And Tom does a nice job of explaining kind of what the time was like against the Cold War at that point, and then the craziness on the basketball court in those final 3 seconds in Munich. So looking forward to Tom McMillan next week. You can catch all of our podcasts on all the major platforms. It's also on Facebook as well. And I want to thank all of you for listening and look forward to hearing from you again next week on Musings on Sports.